Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Qasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big. Get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
All right, welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim, and our guest today is Abdullah. So Abdullah, if you want to go ahead and introduce yourself, tell us where you live and what you do for a living.
Hey, Dan. Hey, Dan. And hey, Qasim, how are you? So my name is Abdullah Ali, and I'm basically, by profession, I'm basically a computer science student. I have been in business for the last 10 years, and I have basically been helping entrepreneurs all around the world building their products. So we basically take ideas and then we basically turn into different products. And then those products could be like, recently it has been like blockchain and AI, Web3, a lot of those stuff. But I mean, we help people from all like places of life, starting from like, we have helped lawyers, we have helped like to build people marketplaces and stuff like that. So I mean, it's a diverse experience I had for the last 10 years helping people and helping world to make it a better place.
Awesome. So can you just share with us, you know, first of all, where you're located, but also just how you got the idea to start your business in the first place?
So I was basically like 12 years back, I was working as a freelancer because I was from a tech background, and it was basically a good practice to basically start your career doing a job and then basically doing some sort of side work. But after working like 2 years, I basically figured out that I need to basically do something on my own. And then I started working with a few people. I started with like 3 people. And then after we were basically 3 people, it got to like 10. Then, I mean, right now we are like 130 people and we have a team of designers and developers. So that's how we got started. I mean, it was like a very long journey, but it was totally worth it.
So can you just kind of you know, go more into detail? Because I feel like, you know, just like our audience would like to know, because obviously it's one thing that you started as a freelancer now from 3 employees to 130. So what did that look like? Like what steps did you take to actually scale your company to this level?
So like I mentioned that I initially started as a freelancer. So when I started a freelancer, it was very important to basically make customers were very happy with your work, because your customer make you successful. So that was my motto initially. And then, I mean, I started helping companies who were basically just starting up. They grew and we grew as well. So once you make them successful, they'll come back to you and they want you to be basically work with them for a long time. And then they need more resources as well. Back in 2015, I got a client from US. I set up a partnership with him because the things were pretty much going very smooth. So once I get that particular partnership going, there were a lot of connections coming through this partner, and there was basically a lot of work coming in as well. So there were like 5 different companies. We worked with them, and mostly were from the marketplace and fitness domain. So what we did is basically we made a niche out of it. And once the niche was out there, we basically started working on our website. And from our website, we started generating leads across those particular keywords where we were very good at, because we were very good at fitness app development. We were very good at restaurant app development companies. And then we were helping some marketplaces, like we helped some barbers basically make marketplaces. So where they were basically selling their services. So we basically built those niches, and across those niches, we started doing a lot of marketing through Google. There were some organic inquiries, and then there was basically some inquiries through AdWords as well. So from us, it was basically defining a niche we were very good at, and then started the marketing process. And since we had a very good domain of what we were doing, so closing of the customer was like pretty easy, because we had the right experience on the background.
So in terms of the fitness domain, like what have you worked on? Obviously, the fitness space is a very fast growing industry. It's also very crowded. But, you know, here in the US, we have different apps. I'm sure that you might know, like Trainerize or things like that. So like, have you worked on some of these like larger apps or projects, or what have you specifically like worked on in the space?
So we worked on multiple applications. One was basically Fiverr. Then there was basically a fitness trainer named Brittany. We work for her. We help her basically make an application for her audience. So we are basically building application for people who want to basically build a brand. Because on one side, you have a website where you are basically self-branding. But on the other side, if you have a larger audience and the audience are normally approaching your content through the mobile application because they're in a gym, they cannot carry their laptop with them. So we were basically helping them build those applications so they can use it while they're working out. Mm-hmm. And then it was basically keeping a count on the calories. And then it was basically guiding them what personalized training they can do. So that was basically the thing we did, done with a couple of influencers who were basically in the fitness space.
Cool. That's cool. So Abdullah, what's the most unusual request or demand a client has ever made, and how you or your team responded on it?
Okay, so it's a very funny story that we started working on an application and was basically meant for influencers. So I asked the client, how many customers are you anticipating? And he said that it would be roughly around the 10,000 range. So he started like bombarding a lot of TikTok influencers to basically get into the ad. It was basically more of an application where you are basically getting customers, and the customers are paying you to view your content. So it was essentially a TikTok clone, but for influencers who want their audience to pay to view their content. Since a lot of it's not like adult content. It was basically content which you normally have on TikTok. So it was basically for those particular customers, and then. Since a lot of influencers got on board, so on the first night, I still remember that it was 3 a.m. in the morning, I started getting calls from the customer that your infrastructure crashed. And I was like, I'm in my bed. I mean, what to do? And he told me that, since there is still marketing going on, so you need to basically get up and fix this stuff for me. And when I checked into the AWS logs, I figured out there was a million requests. In a way, it was basically a good thing for the customer. But since we were not prepared for it, we had to basically get the application up and running within the next 8 hours. So I got from the bed at 3 a.m. We fixed it before 11 a.m. in the morning. It was night in US time, but we were able to basically get it up before the client goes to bed. So things were working fine, but that was basically an experience that where I had issues. Mm-hmm. Because normally when you're discussing expectations from the client, if the client tells you what you're expecting from the system on the application or the infrastructure side, you can basically prepare for it. But sometimes things go haywire.
All right. So have you ever, I believe you are getting requirements on daily basis from different prospects, and you're responding back. I'm 100% sure on it. But have you ever received a very weird requirement from any client that just confused you completely, that even you should work on it or not?
I would say a lot of weird requests comes up. Sometimes it's basically, I need to basically have access to my wife's phone. So, I need to build an application for that. Sometimes I get that request. Sometimes a competitor is basically telling me that I need to basically hack a website of my competitor. This is the website address. You need to basically hack that. So we get a lot of requests like that. People basically want to get the other person down. So yeah, we get a lot of requests.
Okay, great. That's it. So, Abdullah, how you find the best fit technology for your software house or for your business, and how you basically select a technology for a particular project or a product?
So whenever we are selecting technology, we basically look into what the industry is like, and we don't want to basically get the client confused with a lot of technology things. So one of the things which I normally see is basically the support for technology. Last year around, we had a request for a client who was basically on Joomla, but Joomla doesn't provide a lot of support. So I basically mentioned that we need to move to WordPress, where there is a large community base. And let's say even if you go from our company to another company, it would be easier for you to find developers there. So I would say that the community plays a big role that whatever technology we are building, how good is the technology and how strong is their community? So these are the two things which I normally consider whenever I'm basically choosing a technology for the customer. So because there could be new technologies coming in, because back like in 2015, we were working on only PHP, and then on we were doing native applications only. But after React Native got matured, and then there was basically Python, and then there was basically Node.js coming up. So we thought that we need to basically get ourselves trained on that, because these would be the upcoming technologies because of the frameworks they provide with the security protocol.
Okay, completely makes sense. So I believe you must be facing a lot of challenges, because every business faces many challenges. Every day there's a new challenge on the table. What are the challenges you are facing at this time in your business?
If you would say currently, this is a post-recession. I wouldn't say like a post-recession. We are into recession, but I mean, I think the market has basically already hit the bottom. So we are right now above the bottom mark. A lot of customers you're working with, they basically, their business got affected by the recession factor. So we had some cuts there from the customer end. But mostly the challenges nowadays are basically on the sales side. On the technology side, I would say that since a lot of technologies are coming in, and a big problem with technology is they are technology which come in and go. Let's say if you prepare your team and you're basically expecting that this technology would go boom, and you have to basically get yourself or your people trained on those technologies. And then after 6 months or 8 months, especially in the Web3 domain, the technology goes, because there were some loopholes in the technology. So on the technology part, I would say how the technology is like transforming, that's basically something of a challenge on the technology part. And on the sales part, I mean, recession is basically there.
So in terms of scalability, it's like, what does that look like for you? Like, what are you looking to in terms of, you know, revenue, for example? Like, can you share some of your goals for 2024? And also, like, how are you going to get there, you know, as you continue to scale and grow this business?
I would say, I mean, on the scalability perspective, since we are not a product company, we are a services company. So scalability will be, if you have to scale in revenue, you need to scale up your numbers. If we are 130 today and we have to basically target a good revenue, because that is at the end of the day the goal, you need to basically scale up your resources so they can basically get deployed on different projects, and then you get those things done, and eventually you basically attain the revenue model as well, the targets you're doing. In our case, we are basically hoping to get by 2024, we are trying to get around a 200 plus mark, because there are slabs where you basically get hit and you rebound, because like in the financial market, you basically hit a top number and then you get there, and then you have to basically come down and there's some correction there as well. So the same case goes with resources and companies as well. You basically hit a number like pre-COVID, we were like 150. We had to basically come down to 130. So, I mean, we are trying to hit the 200 employee mark, but I mean, I don't know if you're basically talking about the revenue as well, but I mean, in terms of resources, I mean, in terms of revenue, we are basically targeting around $10 million by 2024. So that is basically looks like a realistic number from where I see it, but I don't know about the market. If the market stays where it is, so it wouldn't be like a doable number, but if the market goes up, then I would say that $10 million would be a good number to have.
So in terms of, you know, from the services side, it's like, how do you, you know, keep your clients paying you continuously, right? I mean, so if you have, let's just say $10 million like in revenue for 200 employees, that's pretty good revenue per employee. So how are you making sure that your clients are, you know, not churning and that you're scaling up as you're building out, you know, products for them?
So since whenever you're building product for entrepreneurs or people who are basically raising funds, if you're basically providing them a good service, they will eventually went on to pay you a lot of good money. I mean, I did a client for like, I built an application, like I would say in 2016, the application cost was like $3,500. We got the application done and we said that it's too low for us. We wouldn't be working on the that project again. He hired another company. The application went boom. And then the client was basically paying us $5,000 per resource. So he was paying like $15,000 for three resources because he was not able to find the skill set we were providing. So it's not the cost upfront you basically charge, it's the service you provide customer. And then basically once they are successful, you basically charge them a good number. And then that's how you sustain it. So because people who are looking for offshore companies, they would see that they are looking for cheaper option. But as soon as they are successful, and they know that they have gotten the right team, then definitely they'll pay you a good number.
For sure, yeah. I mean, Cosmin and I always discuss, I'm like, people want savings. Well, people want more than anything else is quality, because savings mean nothing if you can't deliver. And I think, you know, what you show is that it's like there's lots of challenges in different companies where they, you know, can't deliver and then you end up paying more and things like that. So if you have this high quality of service like what you have, it's a very, very different ballgame. So where would you say most of your customers are located today? Are they here in the like in the US or somewhere else? Like, what does that look like?
So it's basically more in the US side. I mean, and continuing on your point, I mean, we did like in 2016, we worked for a customer and he paid us $350 to fix an issue. And that customer is paying us like $1 million per year right now in retainer, because they have grown to that particular level. That is like our biggest customer. But I mean, things like that, things of that that nature, where you basically have customers who are very happy and successful, and then you basically get your share in the success. So I mean, that's how I normally perceive clients.
So you don't turn down small projects, I'm assuming.
I mean, it depends on the definition on smaller projects. In 2016, we were doing like very small projects. Right now, the lowest we do for a mobile application is roughly around $15,000 to $20,000. But our goal is not those $15,000 to $20,000, but our goal is to basically make it to a level where we can basically outsource and resources and charge them a good retainer fee every month. So we grow the company, because if you have one-time customers only, you cannot grow your company. You cannot have like a 500 or 1,000 people company. So that is the key, how you make your customer happy about the services you're providing.
So what does that look like after you build something out? You sign like a 12-month contract with them, or what does that look like for you?
So once we provide them a monthly contract, because we want them to feel that they are very secure as well. Instead of binding them to like a 12-month contract, we basically say that it would be a 1-month contract. So if you don't like the service or if your business go down, then I mean, it's okay. It's fine. If you can basically terminate the contract within the month, but it gives them the surety that what we are providing is quality. I mean, sometimes it's basically, we provide like 3 months of free support once the product is live. If the product is like 100K plus, we provide 3 months of free service just to make sure that, I mean, the client is happy. And normally the client don't come back to us with issues. So, I mean, that's where our paid support period starts.
Makes sense. So what would you say is your top business priority now that we're wrapping up Q4 of 2023?
Right now, I mean, the AI and Web3, those are like very hot things right now, whatever you develop. So I was basically getting into some very small portfolio type AI products, which we can do. It would be more like a Grammarly competitor, or maybe a plugin for a Shopify, which is basically AI powered. So it basically gives you insights. Shopify already provides you a lot of things, but I mean, apart from that, you can basically have plugins to support the admin side of things. So we're trying to build very small products, and it would be more of a portfolio product. So we would be basically getting retainer customers, because once you publish apps on Shopify App Store, then you basically get a lot of repeat customer, because they're paying a retainer like $100 or $150. And if you have like 5-6 applications, and since the AI world is basically going boom, so that's why once we have those products in place, there would be a lot of services work coming on from there as well.
Makes sense. So what do you think, what's the scope of AI in 2024? What type of boost they will have? In fact, what type of boost AI will have, and what type of boost will be on blockchain projects?
So I mean, blockchain as a technology, I mean, I started working on blockchain from 2015. It was a very immature market. So blockchain was initially anticipated as only cryptocurrencies are basically in blockchain. So that was the only application. And there was basically a lot of money coming in because of the financial side. So a lot of financial institutions were basically investing money in blockchain. But I always foresee that blockchain would have a lot of application. And since in the last couple of years, since AI is basically coming on the market, and since a market already has a lot of data to basically play with, so I would say that a lot of decision making and things would be coming on AI, and there are a lot of like smart applications which are built on those data. So I would say that from a perspective that let's say even if my company has a data of like 10 years, then there could be based on those data, a lot of decision can be made based on the previous like predictions of how things are coming up. So it would help companies basically build their policies around it.
Makes sense. So what would you say is the one biggest piece of advice that you wish you knew before you started this company?
I would say that don't run after money, provide the services, and then the world will be after you providing the right kind of services. Because if you're too money oriented at the very start, then I would say that you will fail, because you wouldn't get money till you provide the value to your customers.
100%. I could not agree more. So if somebody watching this wanted to reach out to you, do you mind sharing your company website or social media handles, like best way for somebody watching to get in contact with you?
Yeah. So our brand name is Coding Pixel, CodingPixel. The same is basically the our social handles and as well as our website is codingpixel.com.
Awesome. Well, Abdullah, thank you so much for your time, and we're rooting for you.
Okay. Thank you, Dan.
Thanks, Abdullah. Have a good day. Bye.
Bye.
Have a good one.
Allah Hafiz.